Hello and welcome to All Villa No Filler, a podcast all about Aston Villa, the world's greatest football team. Well, it's been a tough few days for the mighty Villa, let's be honest, following losses to both Olympiacos and Brighton. We'll get to those games in a minute, discuss those, and later in the show, Frankie cooks up another of his spicy questions. First things first, Frankie, you're back home in the motherland, you're in Solihull, how are you?
I'm back in the Costa del Solihull. Very warm weather up here, very sunny. I got some serious sunburn today walking around Bruton Park. Basically the reason I'm here is because the train stopped working. I got to the train station on Sunday, and for about the 10th time in a row, lots of very bleak faces and people looking around with thousand-yard stares as they realise the trains once again have been cancelled and delayed. So, yeah,
was it the same look on those faces that were amongst the Villa fans at Villa Park when Olympiacos scored their fourth goal?
It was very similar. It was very, very. I was like, I've been here before. When was I here before? 3 days ago, at Villa Park on Thursday night. Yeah, very, very similar to that. But not the worst place in the world to be stuck. Although the guy behind the barrier did make it sound like it was. He was like, "Sorry, mate, you ain't getting down to London today." And I tell you what, I wouldn't bother tomorrow either. I wouldn't bother. And it made it bloody sound like I was I'd staying in bloody Mordor. Like, all right, well, okay. Solihull's like just the scariest place in the world or something. It was hilarious, but yeah. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast. And he's like, oh, he's dishing me, this guy. Who is he? But yeah, it was, So yeah.
Maybe it was just a quite cantankerous worker on the network. I mean, I imagine there's quite a few at the moment.
Mate. You want to get anywhere, you ain't getting anywhere today, mate. You ain't getting anywhere. He's a Blues fan's what he is. He's overcoming relegation.
Yeah, God, yeah. I'm sure we've got plenty of time to talk about them as well down over the weekend.
But I've set aside an hour of my evening for that.
Yeah, well, I'm more than happy to talk about that. Definitely, Frankie. Yeah. We'll start with the bad news. Get the bad news out of the way.
Yeah.
The defeat against Brighton. We'll talk about Olympiacos as well, and obviously the upcoming game in Athens on Thursday. But the Brighton game, first things first. Frankie, we look dead on our feet at the moment, don't we?
We look a team who needs a break, I think, is the
way to
put it.
Like the rail network across the UK, dead on its feet.
Yeah, it's just, we need a break. I mean, look, if you look at the stats from the Brighton game, they had 15 shots. We had two. They had eight on target. We had one on target. It felt the entire game. I thought Brighton and Villa both looked like teams who've played a enormous amount of football this season. You know, Brighton were in Europe as well. And both teams have endured a substantial number of injuries. I don't know why this is never talked about on any of these on any of these broadcasters. I never feel like I hear any reasoning as to why Aston Villa are at the moment looking a little low on energy given sheer game volume, and on top of that just the number of injuries. I mean, Morgan Rodgers gets injured again. Yesterday I think ideally we would have changed something in the centre. I think McGinn was struggling, but we don't have an elite centre midfielder to come in and do anything, so he has to play these guys essentially for 90 minutes. And I'm sure if Tielemans was fit, Tielemans would have come in and probably offered something a bit different. Zaniolo even as well. So it just felt a bit...
On that point, do you think that suggests that Emery doesn't really rate Timur Openham?
Probably.
And he could be off in the summer?
I think so.
You'd think he was on the bench. He's a midfielder that could come in conceivably and play instead of them. But he's persisting with McGinn and Louise. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think that's it. Obviously, he doesn't really trust him yet to play enough because, the proof's there. He's not playing. So... I do think Robinham's a talented guy, but I think the sort of the signals just going off the fact he's not playing that much would insinuate this summer he might be somebody who heads off, which is what it is. What it is, it's just football, isn't it? People, there's always turnover. I think in that we had the ball a lot at the back, and we just. The ball from back to front just wasn't on at all. Nothing was sticking up top. I think Watkins looked isolated against Adam Webster. You know, big 6'8" lurch that he is, defending, you know, our handsome marble statue come to life. Ollie Watkins, a fine looking individual and a fine talent as well. It was tough for him. And then I just think Bailey looks like he's playing through an injury. The strapping around his knee would suggest so. I think Diaby just was a bit anonymous. I think Rodgers getting the injury, just nothing really clicked at all in the final third. Now, I think, like I say, it's just a threadbare squad who's played a huge amount of games. And I think it's all just, it's been one of the best seasons ever. But it is a season now that I'm kind of like, I wouldn't mind it just ending soon, just to give these guys a break and give them, you know, let them go off, sit on a sunbed, drink pina coladas, and just admire the sun of over Solihull and the Costa del Solihull and Bruton Park, you know, and have a nice few weeks off. I think that's what it looks like they probably need.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much square pegs and round holes time at the moment. You know, you've got, you know, Cash coming on playing right wing because of Rodgers' injury. And okay, he played right wing for Forest early in his career, but, you know, he's very much a fullback these days. And you know, it's not a position he would play normally, I think, if we didn't have the injuries that we do. We've got McGinn and Luis having to drop back and sit back because of Kamara's injuries. You know, that's not the position with or particularly comfortable with. As you say, you know, Bailey's been carrying an injury for a while. I mean, he's had an absolutely unbelievable season.
He's incredible. Incredible. And X factor of a player.
Yeah, he really has been just superb for us. And you know, the past few games where he struggled, I don't think we should really factor that into our thinking of him in terms of how he's played overall this season. He's been absolutely phenomenal. Ditto, you know, Ollie Watkins, of course, as you say, he was ploughing a lonely furrow, what's that expression?
I don't know, actually. please write in and educate us.
that's a classic sort of man from Birmingham trying to think of like an agricultural analogy to describe Ollie. Either way, he was very isolated up front. And obviously he's had an absolutely phenomenal season too. And I think, you know, I think we have to talk about obviously our second choice goalkeeper, Robin Olsen, who I think had the best game in a Villa shirt, really. He made a couple of really, really important, the world's number two, made a couple of really, really important saves at the end of the first half, was unlucky with the penalty, actually, to obviously knock the ball out for João Pedro to score, proved to be the winner. We're just running on fumes. But I think if you spoke to the majority of Villa fans, I don't think too many would be upset, angry or frustrated with how we've performed or played over the last three games. I think we can all see those players have given absolutely everything this season to be in the position that they are. And even despite the performances and the results over the last three, 4 weeks, we're still 7 points clear in fourth place, which is absolutely phenomenal. Maybe that says more about how Spurs are doing than we are. But
and in a semi-final of Europe.
And in a semi-final of a...
The achievements of this team this season are absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we've been knocking down records right, left and centre. The first, you know, European Cup competition semi-final for 40-odd years since 82 when we won the European Cup. You know, an opportunity to play in the Champions League, the European Cup for the first time since, you know, the early 80s. It's just been incredible. And I'll be honest, and I try not to come up, have really been talked about enough in terms of what Unai Emery's achieved as a you know, in the last 12 months. And obviously at the end of the season, I'm sure we'll have a big recap program where we'll talk about all the successes that we've managed in the last year or so. But I mean, as of right now, it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. You know, even if we don't get through against Olympiacos on Thursday, and even if we don't make it in the top four, if we finish fifth, I think you have to look at that this season already with what we've achieved, regardless of, you know, the season ending, as incredible achievement, finishing fifth, even if we finish fifth and get knocked out the semis of the Conference League. That is an absolutely incredible season, given where we were when Emery took over, you know, not all that long ago.
Yeah, completely. And I think we've shown real resilience this season as well. A lot of games where we've sort of got late equalisers and, you know, bounce back from bad results. You know, this team mentality wise doesn't seem to let things get into them. And, you know, I think a part of that is Professor Unai's no excuse culture, as he calls it, you know. And, you know, I will happily be the man who makes the excuses. leaves all that to the podcast fraternity yeah. and all the fans at home and in the stadium. We can all talk about that. But, you know, he himself, the way he just insists on, you know, this is the way it is, this is the situation, and this is what we've got to deal with, instead of, you know, moping around like Erik ten Hag does at United. And, you know, even Ange Postecoglou at Spurs, I think, has been saying some quite odd stuff recently, you know, about the squad this summer and set pieces and things like that. It just feels like those managers have shown hints of pressure. And I think that Unai Emery just doesn't. And I think that surely has to have some positive impact on the team itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did wonder in my head, you know, if we've got an early goal at Olympiacos, whether we might be able to do it. I think having watched the Brighton game and knowing the squad, the lightness of the squad, I think that's a massive ask for us to do that on Thursday, but never write them off. And, you know, we've got three very tough games, to be honest. Olympiacos away, Liverpool at home, and Palace away, who are now in really good form. They all are really tough, and but I still think this team has it in them to still get a big result somewhere that could either get us through to the Conference League final or alternatively guarantee us Champions League football.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the post-match interview Emery did with Sky Sports, where he was asked questions about the last three games and you know, the perception of, you know, how performances have dipped, results have dipped, and he just basically threw it back and was like, no, hold on a minute, like, you know, look at what we've done in the last few months, look at the games that we've played, look at the results we've achieved. Let's not forget, we beat Arsenal 2-0 away not that long ago. That was only a couple, you know, that was only 3-4 weeks ago. So we managed, you know, we can still pull these results out the bag, as you say, and we've been doing it all season.
Yeah.
So as you say, Frankie, you know, despite, you know, the last two or three games where we have looked a bit lethargic and tired, there's no reason to say that, you know, somewhere along the line in the next couple of weeks, up until the end of the season, in one of those three games, we can do something special. Of Emery's Aston Villa, hasn't it? That we haven't been in bad form over a period of time. Even when we lose games or we lose a couple of games, that third game there's always a sort of a bounce back. Mm. You know, perhaps that might be asking a bit much, given where we are at the moment, given how close we are to the end of the season, and given the injuries that we've got. You know, to ask the players to just give even more than they already have done. As I said, whatever happens between now and the end of the season, even if we don't pick up another point, even if we get knocked out of the Conference League on Thursday, I'll still be delighted with how this season has gone. You know, nothing between now and the middle of May, when the season ends, will make me think that we've had a bad season. I just got massive respect for the players for playing on for, you know, through this incredible spell of games, and playing through the injuries, through the pain barrier, all the rest of it, which they're clearly experiencing. As you say, we're the ones to make excuses for Villa, for the players. Emery won't do that, and I think that shows the mark of the man, the mark of him as a coach.
All Villa, No Filler on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome back, everybody. Now it's time for this.
Will George and I end up in a big time scrap the next time we meet each other after this, the spicy question? I ask you this, my fellow All Villa, No Filler, Mr. Zielinski. If Villa do manage to get Champions League, touching all the wood, that sounds a bit dodgy, isn't it?
But all the wood there is.
touch wood. like Touchwood Court in Solihull. How far do you think Villa could get if they were in the Champions League next season? What do you think Villa could actually do if we got in there?
Oh, that's a tough one. And as you say, Frankie, I'm touching all the wood there is. It's a hard one. it's all gone a bit Kenneth Williams on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult. I think it's one of those things where it obviously very much. I hate to talk about. We're hypothesizing here. Obviously, the season hasn't finished. I am touching my wooden table, and I'm talking. Purely as a hypothesis that we do get to the Champions League. It very much depends on the draw, doesn't it? You know, we will obviously be in pot four. The teams we will be drawn against will be, you know, the kind of like hardened, seasoned Champions League professional sides that are in there year in, year out, which is exciting, actually, because it does mean that we can anticipate some really interesting opponents next year. So I think that's got to factor into it. I mean, you know, you looked at Newcastle, incredible sides, weren't in the group stages, PSG, Dortmund and AC Milan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So they had a really difficult group. And I don't know. It'd be interesting to sort of ask Villa fans listening in if they, you know, please do get in touch and let us know. But would you prefer to have like the glamour ties in the group stages, even though they would potentially be much more difficult and it'd be a much more difficult group to get out of? Or would you want, you know, teams where you think, well, actually, you know, if we do improve in the summer in terms of the transfer targets we bring in, would you like opponents where you feel we could beat them and get out of the group? But I think we certainly can get out of the group. I think.
But it's like an 8-game. It's a different.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the format has changed, and I think that's worth bearing in mind too, because it will be an unfamiliar format even for the teams that are familiar playing at that level. So, you know, I think that might actually potentially benefit us because we're playing in a format that you know we won't be used to because we haven't played the Champions League full stop. Whereas these are teams that obviously played in the traditional group sort of setting, and they won't be used to how it's going to be next year. So that could benefit us. But yeah, I don't know. You just look at the other teams that are in there, or that potentially will be in there at the end of the season. And you know, the teams in other leagues in Europe, in terms of the finance that they have, it's not going to be as high as us in the Premier League. Even though if we finish fourth and they finish top of their leagues, you still think sort of player for player, pound for pound, we would still have a very competitive squad. So I think we've got a chance to go relatively far. I'm not going to say we can go all the way, even with the professor in charge and his European experience. But you know, stranger things have happened. But I do think we could at least make it out. You know, we could make it a bit further than perhaps many people would think.
Yeah, I think we can pick up some good wins if were we to qualify. Same with you. If we ended up in the Europa League, I think, you know, you look at the teams Liverpool played this year in the Europa League on their run, and that actually looked a bit easier than Villa's running the Conference League, bizarrely. But I think Lille were quite illustrative of the type of team we were probably facing if we were to get into the Champions League. I thought they were really good and definitely better than Olympiakos. But I just think with Olympiakos, like I say, the tiredness told a little bit maybe the other day. The lack of squad depth probably caught us out a bit. Just the night as well, it just didn't quite go our way. I think my only, you know, hope is, you know, obviously we have some amazing wins, play some epic teams and all that. My only hope is that we don't end up with like, you know, an absolute battering. It's, you know, like the Allianz or something. That's the risk you take. But what I think it also does is that, you know, if we were to make it, it just means that even, you know, hopefully we can sustain that long term. It can be something that becomes a regular thing. But it also means that for future reference, like Aston Villa are a team who have played in the Champions League. Aston Villa are a team who, you know, it's not just a pipe dream. It's a realistic aim that this club can compete now at this level. And it just it changes the perception of Villa on a global scale, really. And I think our own belief in what this team is. I mean, I've always believed that Villa can be a top team. And I've always compared it to, say, the rise of Atletico Madrid in Spain, or the resurrection of Atletico Madrid, essentially, and thought there's no reason Villa couldn't try to do something similar to that. I think the Premier League is very, very difficult to compete in, just in the sense it feels like there's seven or eight teams who could all viably get Champions League, and yeah, a lot of them have incredible resources and years of Champions League revenues that for us is obviously going to be, it's just harder to compete with that when you're sort of knocking the door down and you get in and you want to stay there. But I think we could. And you know, a question I'd say to you as well, actually, if you know, for Europa League and Champions League, because we're going to be in one of them, what would be like your ideal sort of away day? If you could go to like a country for an away day, or a team, or, you know, obviously, you know, Cyprus or Poland or Greece or Scotland, or wherever, your family's from all over the place.
Sure, sure.
You know, yeah. Wherever, you know, that familial connection would be a big one for you, I guess. But I don't know, where would be like somewhere you'd love to go see Villa play?
I think the first name that came to me actually was, I mean, beyond, you know, the Bernabeu or the Camp Nou, if and when it's finished. I mean, that would be incredible, seeing Villa at the Bernabeu, wouldn't it?
Oh, God. Win 4-0, Bellingham in tears.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be phenomenal. But that's quite an obvious answer. I think a slightly less obvious answer, although, you know, it'll probably be out there for a lot of Villa fans, would be like Dortmund. Just a proper European team with a huge support, iconic stadium, just very sort of... I don't know. Like, I love the Dortmund aesthetic, I guess, of just being a big, proper German powerhouse a football club, and the atmosphere there would just be amazing. And you know, if we got there, if we played them, you would feel like, oh wow, like we've made it.
We really have made it. The image of seeing us play at places like that would be like absolutely amazing. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good. What about you, Frankie?
I love the Iberian Peninsula. I love Spain, Portugal. So I think, you know, a place like a Barcelona, Real Madrid, Sevilla, Bilbao, though I think Girona, isn't it, there? I think
they're Champions League. Some surprising teams, actually, qualifying for the Champions League. Girona, Bologna. In Italy,
Bologna.
You see, Lewis Ferguson, the Scottish guy, got voted Italian Player of the Season, or Serie A midfielder of the season. Yeah,
no, I didn't see that.
And us as well in England. You know, there's been some surprising teams.
I think Germany as well. The Germany, fantastic. Like, I think the fan culture over there is amazing. Something to look at, as you know, with a bit of envy, to be honest, with how the clubs are run, and their kind of willingness to stand up collectively against things that they perceive as to be, you know, wrong, or people taking them for a ride or whatever. I think it's very admirable of that. I mean, maybe some of it's a bit romanticized and all that, but you know.
You're absolutely right, Frankie. Because people look at, I think this concept of money being spent as well in this country, and us having, you know, owners and oligarchs in charge of clubs and spending eye-watering sums on players and all the rest of it, does that make it a stronger league? Well, if you look at this season in particular, just the German clubs with their model, who have done particularly well this year. You look at Leverkusen. I mean, the achievement, if they manage to do it, I think they're five games away to go unbeaten in every single competition that they've
absolutely
entered this season.
Amazing. Is
right up there in terms of historical football achievements. You know, a club like Leverkusen to do that, of all clubs.
Leverkusen, from Leverkusen to never losing.
never losing Leverkusen. Just incredible, absolutely amazing, you know. But Bayern in the Champions League, and Harry Kane scoring all those goals, they've been brilliant. And they've got obviously the fifth place team in the Bundesliga will now qualify for the Champions League next year. They've got that place as well. So, you know, something's working over there. You know, the German league isn't, they're no mugs.
Yeah.
They seem to have a system behind the scenes that seems to benefit kind of everyone, really. I'm sure there are problems. Obviously, there are problems, you know, at football clubs all over the world. But in terms of how they run their clubs, you definitely see seems to be a much stronger connection between the fan base, the local population, and the football club, in a way that probably we don't have in this country, the way that we used to, the closeness of fans and the football club. I like to think that, you know, Villa, we have developed that closeness since Emery's been in charge and the new ownership model. I think there has been a focus on, you know, bringing the fans with the club. I mean, Emery as a coach, he'll always talk about the fans in his post-match interviews and how we're sort of helping the team on the pitch, which I think is quite refreshing because not all managers.
He's done an incredible job in building.
Definitely.
Like, from the very moment he got there, the things he says just makes it feel like he, you know, he feels like it's an honour to manage such a big club like Villa, which is just has always come across very, very well. He just seems like a classy person.
He does.
He does.
I think as well, you know, I think his team is now starting to play like him as a person. Do you know what I mean?
I think they
talk about like managers that sort of change the culture of playing staff as well as the club more generally.
Yeah.
And Emery has obviously been given the keys to Villa Park, essentially. Like the club is being transformed in his image, in a way that, you know, managers like Klopp at Liverpool, or, you know, to a much bigger extent, Ferguson at United or whatever, create that culture. They're the sort of the nucleus, and the club kind of builds around them. I think that's kind of what we're trying to do with Emery, and you're seeing it sort of happen week by week by week by week, where we are changing in his image, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. It does feel like we play like his own personality almost. It's like quite calm. It's going to be interesting to see how it all sort of develops this summer, really, as well, and what goes on. And it's exciting to look ahead to next season. But I'll tell you who's not excited for next season: Birmingham City fans.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to mention it, haven't we?
We've got to mention it. We'll grant them about 5 minutes of our time, because why not, Frankie?
You know.
We've talked a lot about Villa suffering. And I think the way Birmingham have done this season puts it all into a bit of context, doesn't it? I mean, crikey, if we've suffered the last three weeks, they've suffered for about a decade, haven't they, really?
I'm in awe of how they did it. You know, fifth in the table, sixth in the table, beat West Brom 3-1. John Eustace doing a good job. Sack it, you know, they finally get a takeover that gets rid of the absolutely horrendous previous ownership they had. In comes, you know, Gary Cook, who I remember from Man City being a bit of a interesting character, is what I would say. I wonder if he was the main mover behind pushing Eustace out and bringing in Wayne Rooney, because it's the classic football thing, isn't it? Of people who they might have a successful marketing background or whatever, but they come in and they don't understand the football side of things, and they just think Wayne Rooney, big name, he can make our club more famous across the world. And the fundamental thing is, oh, but he's not a very good football manager. Amazing.
Yeah.
And ended up in relegation, and you know what happened with Tony Mowbray was tragic. You know, wishing well and all that, but it's a shame for the Midlands generally, because you want the Midlands football to be in better health than it is, but you also can't not laugh at it a bit, because they are obsessed with us and they never stop bloody banging on about us in their stadium. But I mean, again, what I'd also say is that, you know, my dad's a Blues fan, as I've mentioned many times before. God only knows how. He is the anomaly. All my relatives are Villa fans. I went and bought him a Solihull Moors scarf after Blues got relegated.
That was tragic as well.
Well, you can support a team that might win something. So here you go. It's your local team. You know, and then they went and bloody lost as well. So.
I know. I was rooting the Moors. I really was. I watched the penalty shootout, and I was thinking, oh, no, not again. Because it's the second time in three years they've been to the playoff final, and they haven't gone up. And it'd be amazing to see Solihull in the Football League.
They deserve it.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, I remember when they were playing in Hall Green. You know, where there was two different clubs. It was Moore Green and Solihull, and then obviously, and then Moore Green, they had a, I think they had a, a fire at their stadium and their ground going back about 15, 20 years. And
I don't remember
they
that.
merged with Solihull and they formed Solihull Moors. And, you know, they sort of managed to have a couple of progressions. They went up to, you know, the National League North and then up to the National League proper. And they was doggy paddling in that league for a few seasons. And then they've been progressing and doing really well. And I mean, they've been a bit of a feeder club for, they've been sort of bringing in a lot of the Villa players and Birmingham City players on loan, obviously because of the close geographical ties. Cameron Archer went on loan to Solihull Moors, didn't he, of course? So, you know, I always look out for them, of course, so a massive shame about them. But I think you're right, Frankie, as you say, going back to Blues, like, I agree. I you know, deep down, I do want West, you know, clubs in the West Midlands in particular to do well, be competitive and to help put the kind
not
of
better
the
than Villa, but
on the map. Not be better than us, obviously, but to be, you know, to be doing okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they are just unfortunately a bit of a laughing stock. I don't know if you saw the Tom Brady roast.
Yeah,
you know, some guy mentioned Birmingham City and his ownership of the club or part ownership of the club, and you know, having to deal with relegation or regulation, as the guy called it. it's just ridiculous, and it's crazy to think that history has just repeated itself. You know, with the previous ownership, they had Gary Rowett first time round, working miracles at St Andrews, and then they just sack him for no reason to bring in Gianfranco Zola, another big name but terrible manager. You know, he almost gets them relegated, and they've been circling the drain for the best part of a decade, like us in the Premier League for all those years, and finally. You know, they've bit the dust. But hey, you never know. You know, we went down to the Championship and we sort of struggled there for a couple of years. But you know, all of that suffering resulted in us ultimately being where we are now.
Rose from the ashes like a phoenix. And I tell you what, do you remember when we played Blues in the Premier League the first time, like 2002, and you know, the game not be named or spoken of,
the Melberg throw-in,
and that the visceral hatred they had for us at that point. My God.
That was tough, wasn't it?
Whereas, like, if it was bad then, think about what it's going to be like in about, you know, when they finally play us again in about 50 years and they're like, all right, we're back in the Premier League. And then we just coolly beat them 6-0.
Emery's in his 70s. He's still at Villa Park.
Yeah. Me and you still somehow doing a podcast,
even though like technology has far superseded podcast technology. We're still talking to nobody. I mean, we're probably talking to nobody at the moment, but
World War III has happened, and me and you just podcasted all the way through it.
Yeah, that's right. We're in our bunkers, poor Wi-Fi connection, but we're still plugging away with the podcast. We're not even playing. We're just making up games.
We're just reviewing. Reviewing.
We're just watching YouTube highlights of games and reviewing them.
Reviewing the 1996-7 season.
Well, you know, I think, it could be the best thing for them to go down.
It won't be. No.
I will be intrigued. I'll follow them with. Get on against, you know, the likes of Wrexham, obviously. You know, Wrexham have been a massive story. For me in Wales,
it did remind me of the David Brent quote where he's like, "There's good news and there's bad news. The bad news is that we've been relegated. The good news is that we're going to be on the Wrexham documentary next season." You're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be strange for them, but yeah, it's been, as I said, it's been a long time coming, and there wasn't a Paul Caddis to save them this time, so. Right.
Tom Brady and Ryan Gosling at St Andrews next season. You've heard it here first. That is definitely going to happen.
Well, I tell you what, I think maybe Tom Brady might make an appearance when Wrexham come to town. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I think where the cameras are, I'm sure you'll find Birmingham City's owners. And it'll be great footage for the Disney Plus documentary that is Welcome to Wrexham, for sure. Okay, thank you everybody for listening to that sort of slightly weird ending where we sort of became a Birmingham City podcast for about 15 minutes. I've been your host, George Linsky. Keep right on, Frankie. I mean, catch you later, Frankie.
Catch you in a bit, George. Shit on that. No. Up the Villa.
Up the Villa. And it is goodbye from me too. We'll be back again soon. But until then, come on, Super Aston Villa.